Blog Talk Radio.
Pour yourself a cup of tea, put your feet up, and relax. Show host Randy Fine, narcissistic abuse expert, compassionate counselor for clients worldwide, and author of the groundbreaking new book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, invites you into her sanctuary, a place where your emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being are all that matters. Time to Heal is a fundraising single written and performed by Johnny Z for the Amy Winehouse Foundation. For more information, please go to johnnymusic.com, johnnymusic.com. And now, it's time to meet Randy, show host of the podcast enjoyed by fans around the globe, A Fine Time for Healing.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your talk radio show host, Randy Fine, and I want to wish you all a very happy new year. So 2017 is the new year, and I think it's going to be a really good year. I think lots of good things are coming. Today, I have a really great show for you. We have back with us Dr. Mary Wingo. Dr. Wingo was with us August 23rd of 2016. She is the author of the book, The Impact of the Human Stress Response, a paradigm-shifting author and scientist who speaks about the biological, psychological, sociological, political, and economic aspects of human stress in a fun and easy-to-understand way. She brings with her decades a fascinating and groundbreaking research in human stress, and makes it very easy for the average person to understand. When we were talking on August 23rd, we began to talk about the relationship between the stress response and domestic abuse and how it affects PTSD, which is something that all abuse sufferers, mainly child abuse and more specifically narcissistic abuse victims, suffer from. So we're going to find out more about that, and that's why Mary is back with us today. So let me bring her on and we can get started. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning. It's great to be on. I can't believe it's been since August 23rd. It's been a while, but it's wonderful to be on. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Yeah, we just had so much to talk about last time that we decided it would be best if you come back. So so let's jump right in. You write about the human stress response, and obviously abuse, domestic abuse, narcissistic abuse, those kind of things are very, very stressful on us. How does that create PTSD in us, or complex PTSD?
Okay. Well, my answer is probably going to be a little bit different than the usual, talking bits that you may have come across in the past. This is really interesting. What basically this type of exposure to this type of treatment from other human beings, as well as other situations, causes us to do is to go into the fight or flight mode. It basically trains our what we call our, well, we can call it our automatic nervous system. It's technically called our autonomic, but you think of it as our automatic nervous system, to become hair trigger sensitive, to detect threats and changes in the environment. So basically, the suffering that one feels when they're enduring this type of abuse, whether it's with a partner or a toxic family situation, is that over time, especially when it starts in childhood, your sympathetic nervous system becomes very hair trigger happy, and this specifically is what causes all of the problems downstream, and oftentimes for decades.
Okay, so what exactly, it becomes like a hair trigger, okay, our stress becomes like a hair trigger. What exactly is the mechanism that is happening with us, and why is it so hard for us to recover from complex PTSD?
Well, okay, now we have to understand that the fight or flight mechanism is just one part of sort of a symphony of biological mechanisms that help us adjust to change. Basically, the stress response is our adaptive mechanisms, okay? It's, so we could bring Darwin in and he would have a field day if he were alive. As a matter of fact, he did get his inspiration from the Galapagos here in Ecuador. So maybe it might be the same type of thing. But ultimately, what we're talking about is adaptation. And what is adaptation? It's the rate of adjustment we have to undergo in order to fit whatever the environment is demanding of us. Okay, so. Everyone knows more or less, especially your listeners, what it's like to walk on eggshells. And by the way, as humans, our most potent stressor is going to be anything related to social, anything related to other people. It's not going to be traffic. It's not going to be necessarily multitasking or, other types of stressors. The most common and potent, prevalent type of stressor is going to be the social, psychosocial stressors. And when we undergo a stressful experience, an extremely stressful experience, we have the stress response. And if that stressor, okay, after it's resolved, keeps on going on, and we're not able to what we call committed to declarative memory, but in a way that's very easy for your listeners to understand. If we're not able to make a narrative of it, okay, so it's so shocking. We're just sitting there sort of, whenever we think about it, we kind of freeze up or maybe go into an addictive behavior or some other sort of maladaptive mental response, depression. There's a million and one ways to respond to unresolved stress. So if we can't make a narrative of it, if we're not permitted, if the environment we're in tells us to shut up, or for whatever reason, we cannot make a verbal narrative, and then another stressor comes, and it's the same way. We're not able even to recover from the first one. Okay, the first one could end up with PTSD. But then if we have multiple stressors that come in before the original stressor, and the original stressor before that is resolved, what happens is a very unique biological response. This is what we call CPTSD, complex PTSD. And what it is, it's basically unresolved stressors that are, in essence, piled one on top of the other. So it really, really messes up various memory and cognitive centers. And as well as endocrine and immune response. The whole shebang is messed up. Once the organism, we'll just say organism, understands that the world is not safe, okay? You know, when they've been trained, okay, and this is valid. There are some environments that just aren't safe, okay? But when they've been trained, the entire demeanor changes in order to meet that particular challenge. And unfortunately, especially if we're talking complex PTSD that includes a child maltreatment, which often leads to abuse as you're older, when you're an adult, you're talking, depending on the level, you could lose up to 20 years of lifespan and have all kinds of huge, I mean, I'm talking like 400 to 1,000% increase in various diseases, things like diabetes and heart disease and COPD, I mean, you know, as well as the smoking, depression, drug abuse. I mean, you name it. The STDs, you know, your odds of getting sexually transmitted diseases just go through the roof. So anyway, we have to sort of look at this as a society, because this is extremely expensive. I mean, if you just want to be a bean counter and say, okay, how much in dollars does this cost? I mean, we're talking uncontrolled stress in all probably costs the U.S., just the U.S. alone, at least 10% of the GDP. It's probably more. It's probably a lot more. We're not looking at just social issues. We're looking at crippling financial issues, especially ones that are coming in a period where, like, say, healthcare access is not real reliable or certain right now. So we're looking at a real humanitarian crisis, and we're just talking from domestic violence alone. We're not talking from any other type of stressors out there.
Wow.
Very important, very extremely important to address this.
Yeah. You know, it's commonly believed that emotional abuse is not even close to as damaging as physical abuse. But that is absolutely not true. And I deal with people all the time who are suffering years and years and years of, you know, from the emotional abuse. You talked about a verbal narrative. Can you explain what that is, Mary? Because I'm not sure everybody would understand what that means.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. This is something that your listeners, I really want them to take home. Okay. Okay. Basically, what happens when we undergo some sort of traumatic experience, okay, we all know about the shock and awe, okay, the really uncomfortable feelings, especially the feelings that come from the fight or flight just going haywire, you know, the tight chest, the tight stomach, you know, it's different for every person, the tight back muscles, the just really uncomfortable, can't sleep, can't catch your breath, maybe you're having a panic, you know, it's different for different people, but it kind of follows a similar trajectory. Okay, so if you can't take that experience and, okay, so what that is called non-declarative memory there, okay? So it's kind of a mixed up batch of emotions and feelings and portions of thoughts and stuff like that. You're so freaked out about it, you can't put it together. Now, if you cannot get to the point where you're able to, like, sort of take yourself out of it and reframe it, okay, what is happening at that same time is what's called a hippocampus, which is that memory consolidator, okay? It's not where long-term memories are stored. It's the machine in your brain that allows you to use your verbal memory to label those experiences and put them in perspective. This is why for a lot of people, therapy, being able to label those experiences and hopefully put it in a perspective where you're outside of it, okay, that right there is a major, major, major step in healing from either PTSD or CPSD. It's when you stay in that dissociative response, and let me tell you what that is. So when you're staying in that freaked out sort of shock, you can't move type response, okay, another portion, okay, of your automatic nervous system. It's an older branch of the rest and digest, of we call it the vagal response. You know, your fight or flight gets tired, okay? So this really ancient response, and basically that's the freeze response, comes in. And that is, like, very ancient, and this is what especially the lower animals do, you know, like the deer in the headlights look when, you know, or the deer, frozen rabbit, a rabbit freezes under fear. It is that response. And if you stay in that response, that makes you very, very vulnerable to future traumas and stressors, because basically you lost your rational thought, you've lost your emotional control. Basically, your body's playing dead. So the key is to stay out of that, and to also mitigate the concurrent but yet fatiguing fight or flight response, because that can only go on for so long before it fatigues, and be able to transfer, to label and tag the memories and responses that you have inside your body and get perspective on it. That is when you can transfer that into long-term memory and be able to get a hold on the trauma, be able to heal from it.
Okay, so you talked about, you said if you stay in that response, you become more vulnerable. So in other words, staying in that response years later would be considered a trigger. Is that kind of what you're talking about? So it's when you have something that reminds you of that, you basically freeze. You basically cannot process it.
Yes, well what you're having is it's a really... Yeah, you know how Jim Belushi, he died from basically what was it called, a speedball, where you have cocaine and heroin, you have an upper and a downer at the same time, and it shocks your system. Well, basically that's the same thing that's happening. It is very, very harmful physiologically. I mean, this is where you get a lot of heart disease, heart attacks, that kind of thing, as well as a whole cascade of immune and endocrine and you name it, cellular. Lack of cellular growth, you know, that kind of thing response. Okay, so basically, what you're having is both of these systems on at the same time. The fight or flight gets fatigued because it is very energy reliant, and it does get fatigued. It's only supposed to be used for short periods of time, but when it's used for days and months, it gets fatigued. And so you have that secondary, because something's got to be running. Something's got to keep your heart going. You've got to have the mechanisms to keep the basic vegetative functions going. And that's what your body is concerned with. It's not concerned with rational thought or emotional regulation. So as a result, your frontal lobe, which is your primary stress response organ for humans, okay, which solves all your problems, lets you calm down and think out a way out of this stressful response, you know, to be able to think your way out, to inhibit fear, to inhibit freak out emotional responses. You know, you're sitting there, you're able to be calm, and you're able to get yourself the hell out of that horrible situation. Well, when you're under a stress response for a very long period of time, your brain goes into conservation mode, and your whole body does, and shuts down parts of your body that aren't absolutely essential for vegetative functions, like breathing and heart rate and stuff like that. So, of course, your rational thought's going to be one of the first things to go. Okay, it's considered the icing on the cake. It's not what keeps you alive. It might keep you alive in the long term, but it's not what's going to keep you alive at this second. So you have to understand, I mean, it's a very interesting and beautiful strategy that nature gave us, that really I've tried to make this understood. It's very complex. It's taken well over 100 years, if not longer, of research to really sort of break it down like this. But you see, it's all actually very easy to understand. There's not a lot of mystery to it. When you can put, again, a narrative, if you want to put a narrative on it, it's actually very easy for people to understand. And that's my purpose. That's what I want your listeners to really take home, because a lot of health professionals do not have a grasp on this yet.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, that explains so much to me. I mean, it touches on so many different issues that, oh my gosh, it makes so much sense. So really it's about, okay, so how do we unlock this whole thing? You talked about going back and re-experiencing what happened and being able to frame it in a narrative that you can accept. Now, what happens if you're so dissociated that you can't get there?
Well, the key is, okay, there's several ways, I believe, to look at this. Okay, we go back. Let's go back to biology again. And I can't remember if I covered this or not, so forgive me if I didn't last time. But if so, then feel free to jump in and ask questions.
Okay.
This is where one of the very important hormones, oxytocin, and to more or less a lesser extent vasopressin, but let's just stick to oxytocin. We don't get too complicated. This is a very, we call it highly conserved hormone, which means it's present in many, 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 many species, including microorganisms. It's a very ancient hormone. And it is the primary for higher animals. It's a primary bonding hormone, social bonding, okay? And so I want you to think, you know, if you had a, like, say, a real decent mother, if you had a great mother or wonderful aunt or grandmother that knew, that, like, understood you, they'd get, you know, when you're a little kid, get in your face and, you know, really get to, like, understand you, and you felt totally safe around this caretaker. Well, then this is when the oxytocin comes online, and it alters all kinds of gene expression for all kinds of things downstream,
okay,
especially for brain development. So, but hold on, you know, forget that we're talking about oxytocin. What does oxytocin make us feel? Well, how do you feel when you're with, like, a very, very loving, giving caretaker? How do you feel? You feel safe. That is the primary, like, feeling that oxytocin, when it's activated, makes you feel. Now, so let me tell you another little thing it does. It is also, high oxytocin levels are important for what we call fear extinction, okay? So what it does, so what it allows you to do, it allows you to be comfortable and safe enough, and allow that dissociation, that freeze response, to kind of subside, okay, so that you can start labeling and putting narratives. And when that happens, the thought, the higher level thought, so the thought of the trauma slowly becomes decoupled in your hypothalamus from the fight or flight trigger response. So basically, the oxytocin, if you work it right, allows you to sever the automatic hair trigger mechanism. So it's very simple. It's really very simple. If you can think the thought without going into that panic, fight or flight, heart racing, yada, yada, yada response, then basically, you're on your way to healing your traumas big time.
Wow. That is so amazing. That is so amazing. So in other words, if someone is having a really hard time with this, and they work with a therapist or a counselor who they feel really safe with, that can help them to unlock. It can help produce the high oxytocin, make them feel safe, and allow them to explore deeper. Am I interpreting that right?
You know, it can be with a therapist, or, you know, like I said, you know, if your mother's a wise woman, a lot of them aren't, unfortunately, but,
right,
you know, maybe you have an elder, like, say, well, this is what elders were good for in tribals, you know, a wise, patient, calm elder that, you know, will kind of let you sit with you and not tell you to shut up or anything. You know, you got to be in a situation that's safe, okay? If someone's constantly telling you to shut up, then unfortunately, it doesn't matter if it's your spouse, brother, husband, dad, mom. If you're being told to shut up when you're trying to resolve trauma, you got to get away from that situation until you're, at least until you're, uh, you've, you've committed, you know, you've got to get in a more safe situation because you're
okay.
just going to get triggered and re-traumatized over and over. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's
okay.
a safe situation.
Wow.
Yeah, and of course the indigenous here in South America, you know, they've got ways of handling this. So they've got various jungle medicines that are actually they're being looked at, studied extensively on veterans with PTSD that the system's basically failed them up north, and they're getting relief. That's also an option, and they're getting relief from that as well. There's a lot of a hope in the research coming out from that as well.
Well, oh, this is so fascinating to me and so important in the work that I do as well. It's really
mm-hmm.
important that I understand this. Are you familiar with eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, EMDR?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely.
So people are using this for complex and regular PTSD, and some people are getting great benefit from it and some are not. How is this working? What is the mechanism that is helping people to relieve their PTSD?
Well, okay, you know, and again, the jury's kind of out on EMDR and you know, various other types of desensitization. But ultimately, okay, first off, let's look at the prerequisites. In order for a person to complete these type of therapies, what do they have to feel? They have to feel safe, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, they have to feel safe that if they're doing the EMDR and they're like, you know, in theory, now I'm not sure if this is true, but there's a theory that, you know, if you're like switching your eyes back and forth in a certain pattern, that, you know, it you have interhemispheric communication, and that may be true. We're not exactly sure, and also you know, with the tapping as well. But ultimately, you know, to think of this, you have to feel safe in order for it to be effective. So basically, you're in a situation that may or may not trigger you. You know, you start doing this, and you know, you may start, but then, you know, you're the key is that the therapist or the person doing this allows you to feel safe, you know, promotes that feeling of safety. So, you know, if all of a sudden you bust out crying or whatever, you know, you're not being judged or, you know, told to, you know, shut up or be quiet or anything like that. The safety is the big, big part of it. The others is still kind of in a realm where we're still studying. We're still trying to really understand it. But yeah, the core is the safety part.
Okay, I mean that really does make sense. That really does make sense. You know, and I find that people report back to me because I've never done it. But sometimes initially you can have a great response, and then the more you do it, and the deeper you dig, and the more that comes up, the harder it becomes. So I don't really completely understand that. I guess it's so multi-layered.
I think, exactly. This is another fascinating part. Okay, so, you know, we talked about CPSD, and, you know, it occurs when you're experiencing multiple stressors, especially ones that occur before the previous stressor has resolved itself biologically, okay? So you can imagine that it is layers. It is multi-layer. It is, okay, so basically you solve, you know, a few troubling problems, you know, and you feel a lot better. And then over time, more, if you want to call ancient conditioning, because this is like conditioning like Pavlov's dog. This is, you know, classical and operant conditioning here, you know, so it's nothing more, nothing less. And so you get to, you know, parts of the brain, deep emotional centers that, you know, you were laying down before you could even talk and put words on it, okay? Mm-hmm. You were possibly, and so, yeah, that's why it's a multi-layer. When you're trying to resolve trauma, it is a multi-layer process. It's like excavating, spelunking.
Right. So,
and that's why it's so challenging. That's why it's so challenging. That's why simple behavioral therapy is very limited. It's because, you resolve a problem and something more ancient comes up and holy crap, let me resolve this. And then and so
right.
It's a multi, you have to keep on, you have to keep on tagging and putting words to those experiences, no matter how they come up. You have to just keep on doing that. And that's the only way to really, really, truly get a handle on the debilitating symptoms.
Okay. Wow. I'm so blown away by this. This is just so fascinating to me. I hope it's just as fascinating to my listeners. And it really does help explain what we go through with these, with this kind of situation. My gosh, it is so damaging. You said earlier that we can lose up to 20 years of a lifetime now and have various diseases as a result of these prolonged stressors. And when you said lose up to 20 years, you're talking about physically. You're not talking about mentally losing it. You're just talking about...
No, I'm talking about...
You're talking about illness.
Yeah, I'm talking about dying. I'm talking about kaput.
Right.
I'm talking about, like, how, let's see, Michael Jackson, Prince, George Michael, a number of other. Alan Thicke wasn't exactly very old either. He was only 69. Just if you want to, look at all these celebrities that have died. I mean, you're talking, they had amazing wealth. I mean, they probably had the most premium, level of healthcare access, to organic foods and healthcare and the comforts that a lot of poor people just do not have. But why are they dying so young?
Mm.
Well, various things, whether it's heart attack, whether it's overdose, whether it's various other types of suicide, you're talking unresolved traumas. And so, obviously, it kind of, something to take home since everybody's following all these celebrity deaths left and right. It seems like every week it's something else, and they're fairly young, too. Obviously, being rich and intelligent, good-looking, famous, smart is not sufficient to overcome extreme trauma that statistically leads to shorter lives. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. Yes, I do.
It's resolving the trauma that leads to a longer, happier life, especially from childhood adversity, especially from when it goes back to childhood abuse.
Right. That makes sense. I never really thought about it like that, but that really does make sense.
Mm-hmm.
So you wrote the book... The Impact of Human Stress Response. Can you talk a little bit about that? What this book offers?
Well, it's basically okay. I wanted to write. Well, number one, let me tell you what else I'm doing. I'll tell you briefly about this book, but I want to tell you something else I'm doing since a project I've started since we've last spoke that I think you're going to be very interested in. But the book I wrote, this is a book that was decades in the making, because this subject of the human experience of stress, or you could say organismal, it's not been well understood. We've just piece by piece through many disciplines, academic, social disciplines, not just biology and not just psychology, have kind of pieced together how our bodies respond for adaptation, okay, under, it's all basically about adaptation. And so I just put together a 21st century analysis, hopefully that, had it very carefully edited so it didn't go over people's heads, that anybody, my grandmother, your grandmother, could pick it up, read it, and be able to understand stuff that even, Pavlov, couldn't have even fathomed over 100 years ago. So I wrote it to kind of clarify, to be kind of a book, a go-to sort of how-to manual for everybody, including other academics, including healthcare professionals, including the guy next door, okay? Because this is public health. This needs to affect public health policy because this is very socially where we're at right now in our society is very socially damaging, and we're looking at some long-term consequences. Now, the new thing I'm doing that I don't know, you might be really interested in, is I'm putting together like a program, sort of like it's not really exactly a questionnaire, but it's like an inventory that lists all as of the common stressors that human beings, so it's hundreds and hundreds of stressors, including spaces for, you know, people to write down ones that are not covered by this list. Because a lot of people, and it was originally meant for domestic abuse victims, because these are folks that usually have had stress all their lives, but it can be adjusted for others. But this is what my original project was for. And so basically you go in, and the first thing you have to do is just identify and itemize your stressors. Well, a lot of folks are so dissociated, they can't remember. But if they have prompts, if they can sit there and go through a huge list of stressors, okay, and circle, okay, and then be able to remember every single stressor that they're currently exposed to, then they can take that and then maybe do group work, maybe 12-step type programs, so it's low cost or cheap. So, you know, even the poor folks, you know, folks that aren't, a lot of us are, can afford this, or they can take it to a therapist and they can work on these stressors one by one by one, because that's the only way you're going to do it. But anyway, right. I was wondering, I can kind of, if you'd like, I can send you one of my proto copies of this when I'm done with it. And
oh, absolutely.
Maybe,
oh
yeah.
My gosh, I would love that, Mary. I would love that.
Yeah, I will do that. I'll do that, and maybe we can, do some experiment, kind of work it out and see what maybe some of your listeners might think of this. They can maybe experiment and give some feedback on it. But,
absolutely.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing now. Actually, stress management programs that are free or low cost that anybody in the world, any woman who is in domestic violence or man, in any socioeconomic bracket, because most of them are going to be in the – well, a lot of them are going to be in the lower. The ones that are not going to get the help are going to be in the lower, which is not their fault. Just the situation is such that it lends itself to that. So, yeah, vulnerable populations.
Okay.
Help for vulnerable populations.
Okay. I really like that. You know, I think I actually have done something very similar to that inventory list. I've kind of thought about it, but I really, really want to see what you've done, because I'm sure that that yours is much more comprehensive than mine could ever be. Another question I have is, so we talked about how maladaptive coping mechanisms can just put this whole stressor experience in motion. So really it is about, so if we grow up in a family where, you know, in a normal family with a normal quote unquote, with parents who are emotionally, mentally, psychologically healthy, and they can teach their children how to cope through different stages of their life, you can almost avoid these maladaptive coping mechanisms, but we form them when nobody is really there to tell us how to cope with these situations. Would you say that that's true?
Oh, that's absolutely true. You know, parents, and again, a part of this is problems with society. And in living here in Ecuador, I really realize this on a deep sort of guttural level. You know, with the family is kind of fractured and much, much smaller. And, you know, maybe you might have a single mother household. Oh, my God. You know, with no grandmother, no aunts, no uncles, no cousins, no dad, you know, no other older brothers and sisters. All this has resulted in a huge amount of impoverishment and really kind of a lack of desirability for a lot of people to want to become parents in the first place. Because when you're, you know, used to, you would have an entire, and your neighbors and all that, because you never moved. You lived in the same place forever and ever. So, you know, everybody was behind you. But now, I mean, you can literally be on your own, and your ability to mirror your child's emotions, you know, they bring up a concern, what they're thinking, and there's nobody there to mirror them, or, you know, maybe you're just exhausted and frustrated, and, you know, you just end up getting frustrated with them and they get scared. So you can see where this larger failure of society has really, I mean, we weren't this traumatized in the Stone Age. I mean, we had stressors, yeah, but it was just temporary stressors. We didn't have these stressors that just go on and on and on day after day after day. It wasn't punctuated, or it was punctuated, you know, the lion chased you and you got away and okay, you know, it's over. You can sleep now. But here in our society, we tend to have stressors that just go on and on and on and unrelenting. And this is why probably the boomer generation is not going to live to be as old as the, what we call the greatest generation, the Depression era. We're looking at declining lifespans, definitely, and lower birth rates, very low birth rates, unless we fix this as a society.
Okay. Oh, I think that's so important. I wish. Yeah, it's people like you that are doing this kind of work that it's just so important that we do fix this. I don't think that people realize just how emotionally damaged the average person really is. And this is worldwide, because I talk to people worldwide, and it's everywhere. It's just really...
It's really bad in westernized society. In the
yes.
quote-unquote more developing societies where you have that more tribal... you know, kind of close knits, it's a lot less. I mean, not
right.
to say it's perfect, but they know they're very cognizant on handling stress,
right.
Especially
right.
the indigenous.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Very, very
that makes
cognizant.
Sense.
Yeah.
Wow, we have actually gone almost 45 minutes. every time we talk, we just have so much to talk about. So I do have to say goodbye, but I want to thank you because, my gosh, I've taken so many notes. I'm going to write these up because this is information I want to have at my fingertips to help people as well. And
absolutely.
I'm going to definitely share it. And I look forward to getting that inventory list. And hopefully we
absolutely.
Can do it together.
Absolutely, and I would like to direct your listeners to go to marywingo.com and check out all the free info that I have there, and pick up a copy of the book. It's affordable; everyone can afford it, so it's not out of
awesome.
Anybody's reach.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Mary. I'm so glad that you came back, and
thank
I
you.
Wish
and,
you a wonderful
be,
rest of the day. And we'll be in touch, right?
Absolutely, and feel free to have me back. Always a pleasure.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
So we are
bye-bye.
Out of time today, but if you have any comments or questions about today's show, you can email me at loveyourlife@randygfine.com, RANDIGFINE.com. So thanks again for tuning in and listening to A Fine Time for Healing. This is author, life issues counselor, show host, Randy Fine, signing off until next time. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.
We hope you enjoyed today's programming. To learn more about Randy Fine, read her articles, or to make a counseling appointment with her, please visit randygfine.com. That's RANDIGFINE.com, or visit her on Facebook at Randy G. Fine.